Welcome to the FRSNU podcast with Reverend Rebecca. We're glad you're here. This week, Reverend Rebecca considers how we like to be welcomed. And when we are welcoming, whose welcome is it actually? Her sermon is titled, Who's Welcome? Have a listen.
So last June, at our annual meeting, we voted as a congregation to become a level 2 sanctuary congregation. This means that we covenant or promise to support the Main Street Congregational Church in Amesbury, which is a level 1 sanctuary congregation, should or when they provide physical sanctuary to someone at risk of deportation. Our commitment as a level 2 sanctuary congregation is to partner with other congregations and faith communities in ensuring that the Main Street Congregational Church is able to do all that is necessary while they are providing sanctuary to a guest. And I have heard that there is movement or thought that this may actually be happening. There's no confirmation of that, but it is moving into what is likely to become a reality. So there are many things that go into providing sanctuary. People may think only of the building or the space where the guest or guests stay, and there is so much more that is a part of it. There is cooking meals, grocery shopping. You see, as the person or the people come into that space, it is encouraged that they do not leave that space, for they are safe there. So far, at least now. So anything else that needs to happen on their behalf in the community. So bringing groceries for them to cook, for example. Often, for example, our congregation in Bedford had someone there with them, and the children weren't all living with her, the mother, because they wanted to be able to continue to go to school. So there were volunteers needed who would bring the children to see their mother. There are all kinds of things like that. There's providing translators, finding doctors who are willing to come there to that space, visiting, simply visiting with the guest. Above all, there needs to be someone or two people on site 24 hours a day in the event that law enforcement were to come to the building. So you can see that although one church or faith organization agrees to provide physical sanctuary for the space of that, the actual offering of sanctuary is incumbent upon hundreds of volunteers and many, many partners. We're not alone in our commitment to this sanctuary movement. There are literally hundreds of faith-based organizations who are uniting to continue the legacy of providing sanctuary, including Unitarian Universalist congregations. The Unitarian Universalist Association has a deep history in supporting immigrants and refugees. A resolution was passed in support of migratory workers in 1961 at what was at that time the first ever General Assembly, the time when all of our congregations come together to make decisions on behalf of the entire association. Since then, 6 subsequent General Assemblies between 1980 and 2007 have included and focused on sanctuary and comprehensive immigration reform, including a focus to stop immigration and customs enforcement raids and deportations. In 2013, our Association of Congregations called immigration a moral issue. In 2015, we voted an action of immediate witness to end immigrant, child, and family detention. 4 years later, we have the highest record number of children being detained at 76,000 children. You need to understand something about me, and if you wonder this, and this isn't, you can always tell when I'm going off what I wrote. I didn't write this down. If you wonder if what I'm about to say is true, you can talk to my beloved partner, Bart. You didn't call a political minister. I'm just not wired in that way. But I'm wired for love and human rights. So when I speak of issues, I'm speaking of it from the platform of human dignity and human rights. That's my lens. We affirm principles in our faith. And if we are to live into those principles, we have to ask ourselves what it means in how we spend our days. If we affirm the inherent, meaning from birth, just because, worth and dignity of every person, and if we are not to be hypocrites, we need to ask ourselves, how are we acting into that truth? Jim Corbett, a Quaker and longtime advocate and supporter of Central American refugees, defines sanctuary as protective community with people whose basic human rights are being violated by government officials. Patricia referenced, and I did as well, there was a time I was honored to be invited to go to the State House in Boston and to lead a prayer at the start of a gathering, and this is when the Dreamers were being threatened, right? And I had the honor of standing in that center circle, leading a prayer with this most beautiful amass of human beings that had gathered. And then I was broken apart hearing their stories, listening to what these young adults and families and children were up against. And when that was over, we went to speak at various offices of government officials, and we had doors slammed in our faces. This is the Massachusetts State House. We got it. We get it. He supports it. It's good. And then, nearing the end of that time, I was standing there, and all of a sudden, this bright, really bright light came shining into my face, and unaccustomed to being on the news, I didn't realize what was happening as I was being on the news, live. So this guy with this thing is shining this really bright light. I think he got tipped off by the stole. And he looked right at me and he said, you know, who are you? And I told him who I was and that I was a Unitarian Universalist minister. And he said, why do you see this as an issue of human rights? And I did this, I sort of went, I couldn't speak. I mean, it was this most bizarre question. I don't think they aired it or something, because it wasn't very good. Sorry, Patricia. I didn't know how to answer his question. It was bizarre. Anyway, go. I invite you to go. Go to the detention center each month when there are members of our congregation who go and who stand outside and wave at the men who are standing at the windows holding up signs and hearts. Go. Just once, so it becomes real, and it's not just words. We're all called to do different things. This is not saying, right, that we all have to do the same things. And in fact, if we did, that wouldn't necessarily make the world go round. I do believe we need to get real and personal and relational for these things to really mean something. The contemporary sanctuary movement has its origins in the refugee crisis of Central Americans in the 1980s, when there was an estimated 1 million people fleeing their homelands of Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua for safety. It was an interfaith movement with Catholics, Presbyterians, Quakers, Jews, and Unitarian Universalists. Since 2000, the sanctuary movement has shifted largely from places of worship providing protection to refugees into those same places providing shelter to immigrants in danger of deportation. And today is the next step in our commitment to immigration justice. We cannot talk about immigration justice, however, without discussing the concept and importance of welcoming. What does it mean to be welcoming, truly welcoming? The best definition that I know comes from Lonnie Collins Pratt's book entitled Radical Hospitality. I became familiar with this book several years ago while working with another congregation on their efforts to become more welcoming. We soon learned that welcoming is a way of being. Welcoming is a way of being. It's not a project or even a process. And in her book, Collins Pratt writes, and I quote, "Real hospitality isn't about what we do, it's about who we are." A congregation, like any community, cannot judge their welcoming score based on numerical growth. Welcoming is demonstrated by inclusivity, where all people who are there feel they belong. A welcoming community is one with deep roots and a willingness to evolve and change. Collins Pratt uses the term radical hospitality to describe welcoming. She writes that radical hospitality means activities and desires that inspire individuals and communities to welcome those who are unlike themselves. She claims, and I agree, that our identity as people and communities of faith will be gained, not lost, in what it takes to become radically hospitable. She connects the word radical to its Latin derivation, meaning root. And in this paradigm, hospitality or welcome is understood to be at our core, to run deep within us. And as such, it gives sustenance to all people involved. It gives freely and receives freely in return. To be truly welcoming requires that we allow ourselves to live into the equality that we espouse as Unitarian Universalists. This means we all, myself top of the list, must recognize our own biases and be willing to change. Hence the title of my sermon, Who's Welcome? And no, it is not misspelled. I'm running short on time, but I will tell you I got a number of people who were concerned it was misspelled. And I hope that you will allow me to say what I'm about to say. That's part of our white culture. So what I mean is, whose welcome is it? And out of my own human insecurity, I actually Googled multiple times that, in fact, WHOSE is the possessive of who. Yes, yes, it is. You really put me through it sometimes. So the question is, when we say we're welcoming, whose welcome is it that we are extending? Right? So here's the thing. Welcome means this. Welcome means come in. We're glad you're here. What are you offering that we can all grow from and learn? How will we all be changed by this relationship? An invitation, you see, welcoming is not inviting, it isn't generosity, and it isn't even kindness. An invitation is this: would you like to join us? You are welcome here if you believe and think and act like we do. Being generous means I have more and I'm willing to share. Kindness may respect another person's differences. However, it does not give space to be changed by those differences, which is why kindness is a fine line that requires honesty and self-appraisal. A group can be diverse. However, that does not guarantee that it is inclusive. And I use inclusive to mean welcoming. And the question of power comes into play here and must be addressed. Who decides what is acceptable and not? Whose welcome is it that we are extending? So think of things like this, and by the way, I am all for invitations, kindness, and generosity. And there are times and places for those things, absolutely. I am not dishing them, I'm simply distinguishing between being welcoming and being kind, inviting, and generous. What does it mean to be welcoming of people with all physical abilities? For example, I hope we're doing better with our loop, here in Loop, our accessible pew, our streaming of worship services soon, and yet I know I make mistakes all the time in that regard. The movie Aging in America that was shown here this past week said that ageism is more prominent than sexism or racism. Are we welcoming to young people who may make decisions differently than we are accustomed to doing? Or to people from other cultures who show their affection or appreciation differently, or who worship in different styles? What about our newest members, those 8 people? Are we welcoming them truly? Are we willing to change by 8? Or are we expecting them to become just like us? Can we be welcoming when we host open houses here at the church during First Nights in Newburyport, December 6th and 13th? Can we ask open-ended questions and seek to learn from the guests as much as we share? And what about next week? Next week, when our minister emeritus, Reverend Bert Steeves, and his wife, Maxine, are here with us, can we welcome them as they are today, older than they were when he was the minister? Can we welcome them knowing that Bert is hard of hearing, Maxine struggling with some memory loss? Can we change and realize that to welcome them is to know that they may or may not come that morning, depending on how they feel? Can we see that having a big hoopla and a cake and asking them to talk and speak is not welcoming or even kind today? When we became a welcoming congregation to LGBTQ people before my time here, we changed. We had to. We became conscious of our language, no longer saying to children, "You're a mother and father," as one little example. And my guess is that at first that probably felt different. Then it became more comfortable. And today, it's normal. We changed. You see, all of us like to be welcomed differently. These differences are part of what make us so wonderful. We are never as rich alone as we are together. We are all human, and we can appreciate that commonality even more when we allow ourselves to learn from and be changed by the differences between us. So I ask you, how is it that you like to be welcomed? We want to know. I want to know. I don't want to assume. Our ministry theme this month is perspective. It is critical that we take the time to listen to one another and learn about each other's perspectives. How do you like to be welcomed? You have a sticky note inside of your order of service, and I invite you to take a moment before you leave today and write down the answer to that question. It can be 1 or 2 words, or it could be a paragraph. You don't need to put your name. You're welcome to put your name. We're going to collect them as you leave, and there's a bulletin board downstairs when you enter into the lower meeting house where we are going to put everybody's answers. And I encourage you to take the time this month to read them. See the diversity that is included there about how people feel welcomed. Bart and I are also trying something new this month and through the rest of this church year. We're going to host a party at our home every month on a Saturday evening, except in November it's a Friday. And it's going to be an open invitation for 18 people to come. No special invitations. It's not leaders, it's not big donors, it's not new members, it's not anything except would you like to come? Every party is going to have a theme, like charades or stargazing. And every party has one purpose, one, to get to know each other better, to welcome one another. So you can look for information coming about how you can sign up for one of those. Pratt Collins writes this. She says, hospitality is both the answer to modern alienation and injustice. And it is a path to deeper spirituality. For us to be truly welcoming in our immigration justice work or in any of our justice work, we must be welcoming here. And indeed, we must be welcoming as well within our own selves. William Butler Yeats said this, "There are no strangers here, only friends you haven't yet met." Yea, that may be so. Amen.
We hope you enjoyed this FRS in You podcast with Reverend Rebecca. To explore today's topic more deeply, consider the following questions. Where do you feel most welcome, and why? When did you unknowingly make someone feel unwelcome? How did you learn that you did this? How did you act differently because of this experience? What can you do at FRS to help make this a more welcoming place? Yes, you. We'll be posting more FRS in You podcasts with Reverend Rebecca on our website, frsuu.org, and on our Facebook page. We'd love to see you in person at our services every Sunday morning at 10:30 at the First Religious Society Unitarian Universalist, located at 26 Pleasant Street in Newburyport. Or you can reach out to me, Nicole Salemi, Director of Community Engagement. Email me at nicole.salemi, that's Salem with an I, S-A-L-E-M-I, at frsuu.org. It has been good to be together.